Chapter 5. Essentially, they are a wholly new processor type. When they go into general use, they'll instigate an industry-wide paradigm shift. They'll be for the computers of tomorrow what the Apple I was for the computers of today. Giles leaned forward to say more, but their waiters arrived with the third course of the evening, lacquered lobster tail, black truffle tailgate, and black truffle emulsion. He waited silently as the plates were positioned on the table, shifting jerkily from side to side in his chair until they left. "I see," Annalise said slowly. "And then, if you want me to really see, you're going to have to break this down into much simpler terms." Of course," Giles said. He speared the tip of the tail with his fork, cut it free, and popped it into his mouth. Chewing luxuriously, he hesitated long enough to whisper, "Oh my," before swallowing. "Well, let's see. You're familiar with binary?" "Sure, ones and zeros." "Okay. The first thing you have to realize is that binary is the only thing a computer truly understands. No matter how advanced, how complex, or how fast the processor is, the only thing it can handle at its core is a one or a zero. True or false, on or off. And then the way such limited ability becomes meaningful to users is through a process called abstraction. We assign symbolic meaning to patterns of ones and zeros, or bits, so that they may be transformed into higher levels of meaning." He paused a moment to gauge her expression and laughed softly. "Okay, I can see your eyes are glazing over. Just stick with me a moment. I'll give a quick example and then move on."
"I look forward to it,"
she smiled. Beneath the tablecloth, she freed her foot from its shoe. "Take letters," said Giles. "You're writing a letter, for instance. You have a screen filled with words, all of which are composed of letters. But a computer doesn't understand letters. It understands bits. So how do you find a middle ground so that both you and the computer understand what's on the screen? You treat the letters as symbols. You assign numeric values to each letter, which can then be represented as a stream of bits. Binary is a fully featured numeric system, just like decibel. So the letter A, for example, might be assigned a value of 65, which it is." He pulled his phone from its pocket and tapped the screen for a few moments. "And in binary, it looks like this." She took the phone from him and saw an 8-number series of zeros and ones. As she looked at this, Giles said, "That's all the letter A really looks like to a processor." She passed the phone back, finished the last bite of her lobster, and took a long swallow of wine. She rolled her ankle and began mischievously to probe.
"I understand all that," she said. "But I still fail to see how you go from 65 equals A to everything else. The video games they're making now. What they're doing in movies."
"Yes, but you can begin to see how we use symbolism to bring higher meaning to all these seemingly random bits, can't you?"
"I suppose."
"Excellent. Now, the problem we run into is that computers can't handle problems with a high degree of exponential scaling. They just don't have enough horsepower." She smiled again and said,
"You'd better explain that term as well."
He jumped suddenly and his knees struck the underside of the table. He glanced around the dining room, face deepening to bright red, and then looked back at Annalise.
"I'm waiting," she sang.
He took a drink of wine, cleared his throat, and pressed on. "Let's pretend for a moment that you're planning a wedding. You have big, round tables around which can be seated 10 guests each, and in this situation, let's say you wish to employ a computer to determine all of the possible ways that a group of 10 people can be arranged at the table."
"Well, that's silly," she said. "I wouldn't use a computer for that. I'd just make sure to separate people who dislike each other and keep guests together with their dates."
"Okay, but pretend you need to know the answer."
"But I don't," she laughed.
He jerked again in his chair and giggled nervously.
"Please," he coughed. "Oh, Giles, can you or can you not explain this? I may be losing faith."
"Right, so where the hell was I?" 10 people around the table. So it turns out there are 3,628,800 possible combinations." She straightened at this.
"For 10 people?"
"Indeed. Now imagine you have a dining hall filled with 20 of these tables, and take into account the possibility that you can also swap people from table to table. You begin to see the problem, I assume. Put another way, I'll touch, for just a moment, on the field of simulation. You take the simplest form of iron sulfide cluster,
in itself an exceptionally simple molecular ensemble. Just two chemicals, iron and sulfide, joined up into a little cluster. And it is at the very edge of what our most powerful supercomputers can simulate. How, though, if it's so simple? She asked. Because you have to simulate it at the atomic level to do the job right. All of the electrons, their orbits and interactions. Ah, of course. They were interrupted again by the waiter who came to refill their glasses. How did you find the truffles? Giles asked. Incredible, she gasped. My first time having them. The waiter smiled benevolently and left. Giles watched the waiter's back a moment and nodded. So, let's get away from classical computers. We'll be here all night if we dwell on it. Moving along. Quantum computers. The big deal about these things is that they understand more than true or false. They understand true, false, and maybe. What? She laughed. I know. Bear with me. A bit on a quantum computer. We call it a qubit. Oh, you're making this up now. Quit playing. No, I'm not. I swear to God, this is all for real. A qubit can represent three states, like I said. They can be one, zero, or both, which is called a superposition. The thing about these processors is that they're built specifically to scale exponentially, unlike the classical processor. You can combine multiple qubits into a joined superposition, or you can entangle them together into a unique form of superposition in such a way that measuring one qubit will tell you what the other is doing. Stop, she said. That's enough. You've hereby exceeded my ability to absorb anything further. You have transgressed into a dialect of nerd ease that I simply do not speak. He laughed and leaned in close to whisper. Between you and me, I don't get it either. What? I thought you were called in to consult on this stuff. Well, I'm getting to that, but they want me for something entirely different. This quantum stuff, though? Put it this way. As much as the low-level function of a classical computer eludes you, this qubit stuff completely escapes me. I'm nowhere near as smart as this engineer they have, this Marcus guy. He seems to understand it all perfectly. Maybe, maybe not, she sniffed. In my experience, if a person really understands something, they can find a way to explain it so that others understand it as well. Perhaps, shrugged Giles. Maybe it's only a question of time. Maybe it's just that it all sounds like a bunch of science fiction hocus-pocus, she grumbled. Well, that statement has more truth to it than you might realize. She looked up at him with a confused expression, but said nothing. Her foot had long since settled back to the floor, but neither of them noticed. The reason you don't hear about these things more is that they're so damned hard to build. They're huge and clunky, like the first computers they tried to build way back in the 1950s. Vast, room-filling monstrosities capable only of very simple equations. Part of the problem is the environment they require to operate. A qubit today is constructed from a special kind of superconductor that's read with a microwave resonator. These things have to be kept as close to absolute zero as possible in order to function. Any warmer than that, and the error rate shoots through the roof, and the answers the machine gives you are meaningless. You can imagine the limitations they run into trying to build a quantum computer of any meaningful size. Then, too, you have the problem of coherence time, how long a qubit holds its information. It's not very long at all, on the order of a few microseconds. Heads up, Toots. Next course inbound. They leaned back as more plates were deposited on the table. One waiter took a moment to refill their wine glasses yet again, and then bowed away with a knowing smile. What's the matter, Anna? Did you drop something? He asked. She had leaned sideways to examine the tablecloth. She rustled it about and asked, Can you see my feet? He leaned to see where she indicated and shrugged. Well, not really. She glanced in the direction of the retreating waiter with narrowed eyes. Setting her chin, she found the inside of his thigh and slid her foot all the way to its root, where she felt him respond immediately. Bearing a line of small, sharp teeth, she said, So they have a quantum computer that's sort of useful, and they want you to work on it for some reason. No, he whispered. They've managed to build one that is useful. How? She prodded, daring him to hold his thought. Their CTO, perfected a process for manufacturing carbon nanotubes some time ago, better than anything managed before. That was also a big deal, actually. You could say one revelation followed from the other. carbon nanotubes, she whispered. And why should I care about those?
She rolled her ankle again and swished and prodded. His knuckles whitened.
Not a damned reason I can think of, except to say they figured out how to build a quantum computer that no longer requires all the space or any other physical requirements of traditional system. Good heavens.
Giles?
Christ, yes.
I'm not all that hungry anymore.
I see.
Are you?
No!
Good. Call the waiter over here and pay the bill, would you?
They had turned out the lights, drawn back the curtains, and opened the bedroom window before. The night sounds of the living city crept in to mingle with their act, and the light of the moon intermixed with the electric glow of the throbbing world beneath, bathing them in blue. They lay in the bed amid a tangle of blankets, exhausted and panting from too much drink and not enough food. Giles was staring up at the ceiling, wondering idly over troubling thoughts. Time wandered away from him, and soon, Anna ran the instep of her foot, the very same that caused all of this to begin with, up his shin. Goose flesh stood out along the length of his thigh. He tore his attention from within and looked at her. She lay on her right side facing him, snarl of blankets wedged under her breast and leg, glowing blue hip softly outlined in the window. She asked,
"Can't you stop for a little while at least? Where did you go just now?"
"I am where I've always been. Here beside you."
"No."
She shook her head against the pillow.
"I saw it in your eyes. They drifted away after you came."
He rolled over to face her and took her hand. Her features were hidden to him, as though he struggled in a dream to recall the face of a loved one buried long in memory. He studied the curve of her ear.
"What?"
she asked. "They want me to do a thing I don't think I can do."
"Unethical?"
"No," he sighed. "Impossible." She squeezed his hand and waited. "They built a thing, Anna, and they're not sure what they now have." He rolled to his back again and stared up at the ceiling. "The same way Guardian grew from my desire to optimize basic facial recognition, they built a thing, well, Marcus built it, composed apparently of hundreds of miles of carbon nanotubes and light interacting in ways I can't even fathom, training it over time, just like one of my own neural networks, for months stretching to years, adding capacity, boosting complexity, making it smarter, just to see if they could. 2 years in, if I remember Marcus's presentation correctly, they started giving it tasks. Randomized jobs to perform. Data crunching. Analysis. A certain repetitive creativity in its problem-solving methodology began to emerge. Tangible. Noticeable." He fell silent. Anna waited several moments for him to continue, though he did not. She began to regret her earlier comment about science fiction. Perhaps it had caused him to hold this in. Had she in some way embarrassed him?
"So what happened?" she asked.
"They assigned it a problem to solve, and it said no." She rolled onto her back. In the bottom of her vision, she saw the tips of her breasts point toward the ceiling, and she covered them self-consciously with the sheet. He used to complain about that when they were first married, said he loved to look at her. Then she had explained her feeling on the matter, and he had not brought it up again.
"Is it okay for you to be telling me this?"
"No," he scoffed. "I signed about 100 documents stating I must not. But you're my wife. That comes with certain privileges. I'd caution you to keep it to yourself, but you don't know anyone in my industry anyway. Who would you tell?"
"Even so, maybe we shouldn't."
"Don't worry about it," he said, waving a hand.
"Well, in that case, what do you think? Can this be real?"
"That's what I'm supposed to find out."
"Huh?"
"That the machine refused a task has made a number of Anagnorisis engineers rather concerned. Kevin Roth in particular. As an executive, he spends a lot of time thinking about perception. And if this is what they think it might be, well, God knows how it'll be taken, right? Look what's happening to me. All I did was make a camera."
"So they want..."
They want me to evaluate the machine and determine if a true intelligence has emerged.
Why you?
She asked in a far-off, distracted voice.
Oh, thanks a bunch.
No, really, why you? You've already admitted you don't even understand how the technology works.
Well, I get that you're a big deal in the field, but you didn't build this thing. They did.
Wouldn't they be better suited to judge this themselves?
They seem to think not.
I see their point as well. They've been working very closely with this system for years, so they may be too close to it for impartiality. They want an outsider. Also, and I'm not sure about this, but I get the impression, I think they want me because of my little false start.
The psych work?
Yes. Just a feeling I had. They asked me quite a few more follow-on questions about it. I think they may like that I have insight into the situation greater than your average engineer.
But you said you don't think you can do this.
Yes, he nodded. She turned her head back to study his profile. His eyes looked up ahead, unblinking.
Why?
They're basically asking me to determine if this system has become conscious. That's impossible. You cannot prove whether something is conscious or not. She laughed and said,
That's nonsense. I'm conscious.
Yes, but I can't tell. She slapped him on the shoulder.
Asshole.
No, he winced, rubbing where she had struck him. I'm serious here. I have no way to determine that you're conscious outside of observing various behaviors. I can see that you behave in a fashion highly suggestive of conscious activity, and yet because I cannot actually experience reality from your point of view, I cannot live within your mind, so to speak. I cannot say with certainty that you are a conscious being. I can only infer, based on context. You are a biological organism like myself, built in the same way as me, with a physical system employing all of the same mechanisms. I know that you possess a brain, because you are human like me. I know that you feel and think, because you behave in ways that are predictable and make sense. And most importantly, because I know for a fact that I myself am conscious, it therefore makes sense to assume that you are conscious as well, because we are so much alike from a biological standpoint. She sat up on the mattress and thought a moment.
That's nuts, she finally declared.
Why?
Because it is. You sound like one of my half-assed philosophy majors that like to run around claiming that nothing in the world tangibly exists, though I can smack my hand against a table. I see it. It's right there. It exists. I see you doing the things you do every day. You're conscious, clearly.
Can you devise a test capable of proving that I'm conscious? Asked Giles.
Of course.
Good. And could you devise a test that proves an inanimate object, your table perhaps, is not conscious?
Obviously.
What about a computer designed to simulate a human? Never mind quantum systems. They already have specialized AIs running on classical computers that pass the Turing test easily. If I locked a human in one room and one of those AIs in another, and you could only communicate with both via voice chat, would you be able to devise a test proving that the human is conscious and the machine is not? She did not answer.
Indeed.
Then why bother trying? She finally asked. If it's as impossible as you say, why even step up to the plate?
He smiled.
It'll be a fun distraction for a while, I imagine. A chance to put my name on a paper or study not associated with Guardian. Maybe a way for me to start distancing myself from that system. I'm tired of all the scrutiny, babe. I don't want it anymore.
She nodded. This, at least, was a thing she could understand.
He rolled over onto his side, putting his back to her, and said, Anyway, let me know if you get that test figured out. I sure could use some ideas.
He sighed heavily and said no more until morning.